Full Service Radio.
Full Service Radio. Welcome to Window Seat, recorded live from the Line Hotel, Adams Morgan, Washington, D.C. Broadcast live on Full Service Radio and presented by Amila, the Adams Morgan Youth Leadership Academy, a youth talent in leadership development platform, a community and network. Today we're going to talk about that thing that you got out of school saying, why didn't they teach me about credit? Why didn't they teach me about financial resources and all that other stuff? We have a guest that Mr. Francis was passionate about bringing in.
Yeah, man, money is important.
Money is definitely important. And what's funny is I kind of ran from this guest. I don't know why. Like, I'm questioning myself. Why did I not want to talk about money?
I appreciate you saying that, Chris, because we had a lot of I didn't understand why you didn't want to talk about credit and money, because we personally, I know we have those conversations. I have those conversations with everyone, and I just didn't understand why you weren't into it.
You know, I feel like I'm maturing the more I check my bank account, right? Because I feel like I'm separating myself emotionally from my money. Like, I could be having a great day and then check my bank account and be like, oh, there went my day. Like, no more. I don't want to talk about it.
Ms. Robinson from Rokewood Group, Financial Services, Management, Credit, Repair, Help. Ms. Secunda Robinson, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you for having me. Hello, hello. How are you guys?
Great.
I'm really good. Really good. I'm having a good day.
I got a lot of questions for you. I told almost everyone I know that we're interviewing. You do so much more than just credit, but I know I met you through credit help assistance. You've been helping me out.
All right.
And that's what I'm most excited about. So I told a few people, a lot of people, that you were coming on. I got a bunch of questions for you. I'm trying to keep from just shooting questions. So what do you do about this? What do you do about that? And, you know, hear more about the broad work that you guys do.
But most of the time, questions are how everyone gets things done.
Right.
Your questions may be someone else's questions. So. Right.
Well, the first question is, what do you guys do, your Rokewood Group?
I teach financial education. Like we were saying earlier, most of the time when you get out of high school, you don't know anything except maybe how to write a check. They show you how to balance a checkbook. So you get your first credit card and go off to college, and you have 5 credit cards, and then you have the worst credit in the world within 2 years. So it's more of education. For those who can't usually bail themselves out, I do offer bankruptcy services as well. But it's about teaching you how to be responsible to reach that goal. You know, everyone wants that house, that dream house, that car and everything else. I mean, but it's more about building financial wealth within your family or for your family.
So what are some of the first mistakes that people make that causes their credit to suffer?
Swipe, and more swipe.
But what if you debit? I'm using debit.
Even swiping still. I mean, most of the time, it's better to count your dollars in cash.
Right.
You can swipe, but make sure you have a daily limit. I can only swipe $10 a day.
I'm glad you said that.
If you know you have $50 in the bank, you're going to keep swiping until that $50 is gone. Then you're overdrafted. Then you owe another $35 on top of that. Like, set a budget. Budget is important.
I think that was part of my apprehension, because the rich people I know in my life, they have a very, very strict relationship with debt. Like, they just flat out don't do it. And I hear the same things over and over again, right? I have a friend who, actually, I have two friends that, like, separated from women that they really, really like because they just didn't know how to handle their debt.
Mm-hmm.
So when I hear credit, that's the first thing I think, oh, giving people access to more debt. And I think things are going to be a little bit more troublesome in the future because we have these phones with us, right?
Mm-hmm.
And technology is evolving. And now, like, I don't know, there's apps that you can like check text for like $5 or $10 and they'll put it directly. So it's like we're growing as a community that's encouraged to use more debt, or it's easier to access more debt. And I just feel like a lot of us, especially people of color, are going to run into some trouble.
You know, a practice that I saw someone do, and I thought it was a real, it was smart. They had two bank accounts, one bank account that they paid their bills from and another bank account that they spent their money. So I guess for the month, they figured out how much their bills were going to be, and they made sure at the beginning of the month that amount of money was in that bank account. Or maybe it was just a consistent ongoing thing, and all of their bills came from that account, and they paid all their bills from that account. So it was never an overdraft, I'm assuming. I don't know what the account looked like. And then the other account was the money that they used just to spend.
But where was the savings?
Oh, I don't know. I mean, I don't know. Maybe they had a savings
account.
People
do have that strategy. Yeah. They will set up an account for bills, or they'll designate their checking account just for the bills and the savings. They're still linked, but you never have that savings. Where is the savings? I'm going to spend this much every month, and I know I have to pay these bills, but I'm still not saving.
What's the best setup you've seen? Like when you work with someone and they're trying to, you know, grow wealth for their family and generations to come, how would you like to see them set up?
I'm not a big fan of the good 401ks. I'm not a fan of those at all. But as far as setting up multiple accounts, it works. Like if you have direct deposit from your checking going into an account that you don't have a card for, that you have to physically go into the bank, and you know that bank closes at 4 o'clock and you can't get to it, then that's a good way to save.
That's the only way that works for me.
Yeah.
But you can't have a card to access
them. No card, no. Yeah. But that money is coming directly out your check. So, you know, you can set up 10 direct deposits from your check.
Right.
With your employer. So if you take a few dollars, even if it's $5, $10, every check, and have it go into this one account or two accounts that you can't touch, that you don't have a card to, you don't have access to on a regular basis, you can't just walk into, you know, and just take the money out. It's easier to do that way. When you don't see it, it's easier to save. For most people, you have to be disciplined, though.
I'm incredibly good at living check to check. Like, I'm really, really
good. Is it because you have to, though?
No. I just took a look at myself and discovered that, like, a couple of years back. Like, I'm excellent at that. So, for me to save money, what I do is I put my money in a place that it takes me, at least a week to touch it. And I just bare-knuckle grit through the rest of the pay period. And when you look up, I did, what did I do? I did about 70,000. I think it took like 2 or 3 years. That way of saving. Not having access to this account.
How long it take you to spend?
Yeah. Sometimes.
How long it take you to spend that 70?
Sometimes, like looking at, rent being due and be like, fuck, I don't know where I'm gonna get the money from. But, I came around to having money. I was just saying that shit works.
It works.
So, for me, I grew up not having a good example of how to spend money and manage money. It was more about how to hustle different ways to get money. So, I don't have tools to lean back on. I don't have very many examples to pull from to figure out how to improve my financial situation. Over time, through experience and fucking up, I figured some things out. But what are some basic things that people could do to avoid serious financial situations?
Well, the first thing is budget. And actually, no. The first thing is you have to want it. Because most of the time, we just want to spend. And I meet so many people. I even had a client that we got into an argument because she came to me for a budget. She came to me for help. And Christmas was 2 months away. She had 4 kids under 7, and she wanted to buy each one of them iPads. I said, well, why buy an iPad when you go to Walmart and spend $50 and get them a tablet? It's 4 kids under 7. Why go buy $300 iPads for each one? And she literally like cursed me all the way out because she didn't want, those are my kids, that's what I want. But you don't want a budget. You don't want to be where you say you want to be because you don't listen. So you have to kind of want it, first of all. And then set up a strategy. So most people don't have, it's easy to have the time to do it or to say that you have the time and then not do it, either way. So make a plan, do some research. Sit with somebody. Sit with somebody that you see that's around you that is pretty good with their money, or at least better than you. Take some advice. That has to be, you have to be willing to listen, because your way isn't working anymore.
Well, what if you don't have the money? Like, so I'm in debt. Not me personally, but for as an, well, I am in debt, but I'm not speaking about me specifically. I'm gonna eat tonight, but it's serious. So no, serious. Okay, so say I'm in debt and I'm struggling to pay my bills. I'm living worse than check to check. I'm borrowing to make it. How do I get out of this situation? It's hard.
If you can, take that second job. If you can do it for a year, I mean, take it. If you really want to get out of that, you have to make some sacrifices.
Right.
You're going to have to cut some stuff off. You could be living check to check and just like to go party a lot.
I was that guy.
You can be living check to check and like shoes a lot. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it may not necessarily be that you just don't have it. You don't have it because your spending is bad.
Plus, I think culturally, I think there's something going on with us where we want things now or in some sort of way that isn't, it doesn't help our financial situation. So I was in the military. I think about like all the white guys I was stationed with. We get this thing called BAH where they pay for your living. Nearly everyone I was black that was in my unit stationed with went out and got their own apartments. While the white guys, they each got a room in a house and split it. So you got five white guys living in one room, pocketing $1,000 every month, and every last one of us had to live by ourselves and went and got our own apartment. So I don't know. I think I hear all the time again from people that have money, it's not necessarily the money you make, it's the money you keep. And as I get older, you start to listen to those things. And I do think we kind of have like a privilege being black, right? Because we can live in a hood. That's the one thing I can do. I can navigate in a bad area. So I can find a place to live that's a little cheaper than most and make it work for me and save some money.
I want to say two things, and then I got some credit questions for you.
Uh-oh.
The first thing is something that somebody I used to work with told me. So he was working two full-time jobs. And, you know, when we first started working together, he told me about his debt and his goals and why he was working so much. And then about 4 or 5 months later, he started showing me pictures of a new bike he bought, motorcycle he bought. And then a couple months later, he bought a BMW. And, you know, he's planning a trip to go somewhere. And I was like, yo, why? I thought you were saving for this house or whatever. Why are you spending all your money on this stuff? He's like, because I'm a minority. I thought that was hilarious. That's like, that was his response, because I'm a minority. But
we've talked about this. We've talked about this because I think sometimes when you define yourself as black,
right,
and you're a fan of hip hop, right, you kind of tie yourself to your struggle, right? Like, what does being black mean? It means I've come up and I've struggled.
Right, I've overcome all of these difficulties.
Right, but when you paint that picture in your mind, it's like that's where you live.
Right.
So you got, it's like ridiculous to you to be out of debt and be buying shit because you have the cash.
Right.
For the stuff that you're actually buying.
And what you said made me think of what he said. And it also, it's crazy because it bothers me that when black people have these conversations, they present it as if black people are the only people, or minorities are the only people that suffer with debt or suffer with financial responsibility.
I don't think we stunt the hardest. I really don't.
But it's not even about stunting. I think that it's not a black thing. It's a universal thing.
It's an American thing, really, to me.
Absolutely.
At this point.
But when we present it, you were, as you were saying it, you were talking about, you know, black people, and my coworker said his response was because he's a minority, and that's not really, and that goes back to what you were saying about aligning yourself with the struggle and feeling like this is because I'm black or because I'm minority. This is what we do, but that's not true. Everybody does it, right?
No, that was like the most ignorant thing I have heard today, because I'm minority. Like, seriously, I don't understand.
But it's so that, but so you agree with what I'm saying? It's not because you're black, or it's not because you're a minority.
No, that's a choice.
Right.
That's a choice.
Right.
I don't even think we realize we make the choice sometimes. I do think culture plays a part. I'm a little different here. I do think culture plays a part, because I think the worst rest of the world says, black Americans, you're on the back bottom of the totem pole. And I think you're...
But that's not true, though.
Yeah, no. I said the rest of America, right? So you like us coming up, we didn't see us on the TV and the magazines and roles that You know, we saw it, but not so much, right? Everyone else that was doing good was white. And I've said this around white people, and I just accept that maybe they don't understand the effect that has on a person's psyche. I know when I was a kid, like five, I don't remember, but I remember praying for blue eyes, right? Or some shit like that. Mm-hmm. Thank God.
Is that real?
He didn't answer that prayer.
Oh, God.
But if I had blue eyes, I'd be a little pissed off right now. But it just goes to show that that was my definition of beautiful when I was a kid. So I do think, you know, the opposite side of that is a feeling like you're the bottom of the totem pole is, let me go buy this Benz to look like I got money.
Right.
Or some shit like that. So I, you know.
That she can't put gas in.
It happens all the time. Right. So me and Amari are going to shut up a little bit more and let you do the talking. If you're just joining us, you listen to Window Seat. We're going to talk about financial education. We're going to talk about credit. We're going to dive into it a little bit more. So my first question, when it comes to credit, what mistakes do you commonly see people make when they realize they want to fix their situation that they're in?
Pay everything off.
That's a mistake? What would you do?
You don't have to pay everything and everybody.
Don't tell me that, because I'm for real.
Okay, so, you know, even though you have all these accounts and collections, and most people don't sit and physically go through their credit report. They just look at the score like, oh, I can't believe I'm a 420.
Mm-hmm.
How am I going to fix this? And they go through and they pay everything off. Those old accounts, you don't have to pay off. You don't owe them anymore.
How does that affect my score paying it off versus...
And when you say old, how old? 6 months?
Five. No, a couple years.
Okay.
3 years, 4 years. Especially the ones 5 and 6 and 7 years old. Those definitely don't need to be paid because they were charged off. Especially the charged off accounts. They're charged off. The company actually used their insurance to pay themselves back. And they sold it to someone else that has no contract with you to pay it off. So you're paying these people that you don't have a contract with to take something off your credit that they had no business with in the first place. So you don't actually owe them.
So the people I owe are not even on my credit report, or?
More than likely.
So not the original person.
No, I got what she said. Completely.
The creditor,
the collection agency.
The collection agency.
Right. Okay. So AT&T, I owe AT&T $800.
Mm-hmm.
AT&T charged it off a year ago. They may have charged it. Actually, it's usually like the fourth month after you don't pay them, they charge it off. Because they have to clean their books for the every fiscal year. They have to clean their books. So they'll charge it off after 3 or 4 months. That's sitting to the side. It's already charged off. They sold it to somebody else. Somebody else picked it up for about $200. But they're charging you still $800 plus interest plus the fees that they paid to AT&T to pay it. So it's now $1,000 and something. You don't owe them anything. And you pay them, that collection company, and it just sits on your credit. And just because it says pay, your credit doesn't move. It goes down. Because it was a collection account, and you owned up to it, and you paid it.
So how do you get it off your credit?
You have to dispute it.
How do you dispute it?
There's a set of actual legal letters that you can send. You can't dispute it online. If you dispute it online, and they come back and affirm the debt, then you lose your chance to dispute it further. So you...
Well, you can dispute it online. You just
you
don't
can.
Suggest that a person...
Right. Okay. You can do it online. It's just, if it comes back as yours, you just lost everything. So you'll be stuck with it, basically. Mm-hmm. So you never answer the phone when collection companies call you.
Oh, I do that anyway.
No. I'm just saying, sometimes they'll get you. They'll say, they'll call, you'll answer the phone, and they'll say, is this such and such? Yes. Is your ad, can you verify your address for me? And some people just verify the address.
Oh, I don't do that no more.
Right. And you're just verifying
what happens if you verify your address?
Well, just don't do it flat out. People steal your information too much.
What happens if you do that?
You're admitting to the debt.
By saying, this is my address?
You're admitting to the debt.
You haven't told me that you're a debt collector yet.
On tape. When they call you, it's being recorded.
Right.
You're admitting to that debt by verifying your name and verifying your address. And then they'll go into the, oh, well, this is such and such. We're collecting for AT&T. The $800 that you charge, but now with interest and fees, you owe $1,140. I don't know who you are, but because you verified everything, you already admitted to the debt, so now it's yours.
That is even, I can't, I don't even, you, I, like you said, I don't know who you are. How can I verify anything?
It's recorded.
That, my address is right? I don't get it. it's not right. But I don't have a problem banging on a creditor. I'll hang up quick. So thank you.
So what do we do after we send that letter?
You wait. You wait 30 days and you dispute it. You dispute it. Sometimes it comes back the first round or two mm-hmm. that is yours, but you have to go back and attack it again. So there's a system to it. And a lot of times when you dispute something through the mail, they'll send they have that 30 days. So they'll send a letter confirming, oh, we have it. We're working on it, instead of them actually taking it off. That's just buying them more time. So you kind of have to stay on top of them. But it's a cycle of disputes. And sometimes it always takes you a quick second to fuck it up. But to fix it, it takes a while. And it's a process.
Clients working with you come in the door with low credit scores on this part of your business. What do they typically see over a 4-month period? Like, how much change can I realistically, if I knew what I was doing with my credit, make on my credit report?
I got a 500. Say I'm mid fives.
Over 400? Over 4 months?
Yeah.
Over 4 months, you should be at least a 620, 640.
Well, how high could we go? If you walk in with a five, if I give you a year, I'm curious now.
A credit score goes up to about 830.
But you gotta, it's not just.
You'll never have that perfect 830 though.
It's more than just challenging stuff and getting it off your credit, right? There's other things you have to do. If I have a repo on my credit report, how do I get that off? How do I manage a list of different things? So I have collections, I got a lien, I got a repo, I got different things on my credit. Is it reasonable to think that we can set up a plan where in a year, my credit can go up 150, 200 points?
Yes.
Okay, so take us through that. I have a judgment on my credit.
Mm-hmm.
I have a repo on my credit, and I have collections on my credit. How do I clean that up?
You will definitely dispute everything. Judgments and liens as of January of this year are no longer being able to, by law, they can't report it. So you have them just sitting on there, and they're bringing your score down. So that would definitely be a number of disputed letters going through the mail.
Mm-hmm.
And they would have to remove it. So a repo, sometimes you have to pay them. Mm-hmm. It depends on how old it is. A lot of things have to do with the age of the debt and who the company is. Sometimes they want you to pay them. Like, we'll use Navy or somebody.
Okay.
You'll have a repo that's about 8 months old.
Mm-hmm.
They'll settle with you if you say that I have this much money. Let's say the you owe $5,000.
Right.
I only have $800 though. They'll kind of negotiate a little bit. If you have the money where you can pay them off, but the trick to that is, in order for that to come off, you have to have them tell you in writing that if I pay you this money, you're going to take it all. Because if you just pay them, it's going to stay on there.
So it's not just about paying them. It's about paying them and then getting it off your credit report.
Right.
Okay.
Because if you pay them, you admitted to it, you paid it, and your score still won't move.
So before anything is paid, you should have an agreement that once it's paid, they're going to take it off your credit report.
It has to be in writing.
And what if they don't? What if they say, no, we're not going to take it off your report, and we still want you to pay us?
Then you can dispute it. The more pressure you put on the credit agencies in doing disputes, and it's the system to it, but the more pressure you put on them, it can come off. They'll take it off because they get tired of seeing you. They'll get tired of hearing from you, and they'll just take it off.
Okay. What affects your credit score the most?
Late payments, judgments, and collections. I mean, it's a balance.
Mm-hmm.
You definitely have to keep your usage on like your credit cards low. Most people say 30%, but I say 15% just to be on the safe side.
And if you're using cash the way you suggested at the beginning of the show, then you shouldn't need to use your credit cards that much.
Right. But things happen. So I had an emergency. I had to go get 2 new tires because I had a blowout on a beltway or something.
Right.
Then I need to take $1,000 on my card, and my limit is only $1,500.
Mm-hmm.
So I need to take that whole $1,000 and get these tires and get it towed and all the other stuff.
Right.
So by the end of the month, I definitely want to make sure I put that money back. So that it's always under the 15%.
The person I know with the highest credit score, that's what she did. She paid everything on credit, I guess, for the rewards. And by the end of the month, she paid her credit card off. over and over again. It's just how it works.
If you pay it off before the bill cycle and you don't show a balance, then it's fine. But if you just swipe, and you're not paying, it's just adding up, then that takes your score down.
So should you dispute something on your own? I know you said you could. There's letters out there that you can send to. So should you hire someone like you, or should you try to find out what these letters are, develop a letter on your own, and send it?
You definitely won't be able to develop a letter on your own because it has legal jargon in it.
Okay.
There's, you know, certain phrases that has to be used in order to have this information taken off. So
okay.
I don't think that you'll be able to find it. Well, if you know somebody that knows somebody, you might be able to find it. Everybody has a friend somewhere.
Right.
But for the most part, you would more than likely just have to pay for the services or pay for the actual letters themselves.
And that's something that your company does?
Yes.
All right. So before the show is over, we'll make sure we give out your information so people could get their credit together.
Hey, the financial education thing is what I'm curious about. The people that come to see you about credit repair, what do you tell them? Because if I'm there, I'm probably missing something when it comes to this. That was a terrible assumption, but like saving and, you know, building a natural future for your kids or whatever you have left. What do you tell them after they've repaired their credit? How do you help us grow?
Well, it's not technically for me after. Mm-hmm. Once I sit down with somebody, I find out what your goals are, okay. What your spending is, what you're working on, where your money's going. So it's a system. I don't just take your social and your address and fix your credit. We're working together as a unit to change your lifestyle when it comes to your money, your spending, and get you where you're trying to go. And hopefully during that time, you'll develop a sense of responsibility or another way of looking at things to save the money that you're trying to do, and how to spend it and how to provide for your family and make those future goals happen.
You said at the beginning of the show that you were not a fan of 401ks. What are you a fan of?
I like people that save. I mean, most of the time, if you just save and put it in the bank with high interest or any type of savings that's locked in at the bank, like 401k, your money is up in the air to me. There's no guarantee that it'll be there by the time you actually retire, because it's going in and out of the stock. 401ks, your money is being juggled around.
Right, but
so financial advisors would tell you that the best place to put your money, most times, unless you're a risk averse person and you don't want to take any chances, they'll tell you to put your money in the stock market, and they'll show you these different tablets of numbers and percentages, and how to, over the last 20 years, the stock market has been up this percentage, and if you'd have kept your money in the bank, this is how much you would have made. If you had it in the stock market, this is how much you would have made. It's like all the numbers say, if you want to save, the best place to put your money, if you want to save and earn on your savings, the best place to put your money is the stock market.
Well, what, a 401k is technically in the stock market.
Right. So, but you're saying don't do that.
Well, I don't think they would say that either.
That's absolutely what they say.
I mean, I think I've read Bill Gates say that most financial people, you know, most financial advisors are not being S&P 500. So there's a particular place. But I think there's a lot of people who are making money putting in real estate. There's things that are appreciating at a crazy rate. So I don't know if I would say it's the best place to put your money.
Well, I'm saying that's what a financial advisor would say. But everything you're saying still isn't just put it in the bank, which is what she's saying.
No, I mean, you have options. But for me, if I can find something to lock it in where I can't touch and withdraw and it's just growing interest,
right,
then that's the best place for it.
So
instead of the 401k, it's basically you're juggling my money. I don't know if I'm going to be able to access or if it's even going to be there when I need it.
What about jobs that offer matching? You know, if I put in 100, they'll give me 100. It's like free money.
Yeah. And they're playing with your money and their money. I mean.
Okay. So is that your personal?
That's my personal.
Okay.
That's my personal. I mean, it's not for everybody. It's just how I feel about it. I'm not a big fan of it.
Okay. So where would you, a CD account, what
CDs are good, bonds are good. I mean, somewhere where it's solid, where it's not moving around.
Okay,
everything is different for everybody, so you kind of find out what works for you. If you're a good saver, find something that has high interest. If you're not a good saver, buy something that you can't touch, like a bond, you know, things of that nature. There's different ways. You just have to kind of research and sit with somebody that's actually going to help you with that.
If I can ask, what do you do personally?
I save.
just put it in the bank.
I'm a good saver.
Okay. All right, so we're going to take a quick break, and we'll be back with Mr. Kendall Robertson from Wokeward Group to talk more about how you can save and save your money and improve your credit. Welcome back to Window Seat, broadcasting on Full Service Radio, live from the Line Hotel. We're here with Ms. Secunda Robertson from the Rokeward Group.
Hello.
Talking about credit. So, well, we're not only talking about credit. We're talking about finances and credit. I'm most interested in credit because, for me, it's a big deal. That's where I get caught up. And I know we asked a lot of questions, but I have just a few more. What's the fastest way to get my score up?
Pay down your debt as far as your credit cards go.
Mm-hmm.
That utilization is very important. So you can't do anything about the card now because it's kind of locked in. It's going to slowly go down as you pay.
Mm-hmm.
But the fastest way is to remove the negative items and then pay off your actual credit cards. You don't have to pay them off all the way. Just get under that 15%.
What if I don't know? And I hear everything you're saying, but I don't know how. I don't know where to begin. What's the first step that I should do? First thing I should do, how do I get my credit report? How do I see it?
Annualcreditreport.com. People use ScoreSense. Credit Karma is free. ScoreSense, I think, is like $7 a month or something. They may have a free 7 days, but at least you can just use the free 7 days to look at your credit. Most people are scared to even look at it.
Right.
I think that's an area is kind of confusing a little bit, because if you're looking to buy a house and you use creditkarma.com, the credit score that you're going to get on Credit Karma
is not
going to be the one they're going to look at. And the credit score I'm going to get on my banking app is going to be a little bit different than, any other place I can get my credit score. So I know sometimes when I'm looking, like, because I'm thinking about buying a house now, It's kind of hard to find the actual credit score.
So my FICO is the best for that, but there's a monthly fee.
Yeah, they're like,
so
they're
a lot
expensive.
Of people, right? So a lot of people that actually want to start building their credit,
mm-hmm.
they're slowly changing their spending habits. So Credit Karma is a good place to start, so you kind of have an idea of things that you have on there, and then Annual Credit Report is free, so you know what's on there in more detail than Credit Karma, and you can actually print it out. So those are just starting places. Once you start to get into a habit or you start to save money, you're able to have a little extra money where you can constantly monitor it and pay that monthly fee to MyFICO or something like that, then I would say, you know, jump on it. But when you're just starting out and you don't really know what's on there, just to kind of get a general idea, I would start with the cheaper options.
Right,
first.
Free.
The free.
Right.
All right, so I go get a free credit report online. I look at it. I'm like, what the fuck? What is all of this? I don't know what to do. I didn't realize I owe this many people. I ain't got this money. I don't owe them. Who are they? You know, what do I do next?
Make a list. Make a list of everybody that's on there. And definitely pay attention to those old addresses and phone numbers, because those play a part too. If you've been the same address for 5 years, take all of those old ones off.
Okay.
Those phone numbers, that actually changes your score as well.
Really?
It does. Those old addresses and phone numbers actually change the score. When you update your employer, it changes your score. Wow. All the information is kind of lingering on. It just, I don't know why it does that, but it's like a weight. Like every entry is a weight on your credit file.
Because I've been in the same place for 10 years, and I know my report got crazy old address. Secunda, we got to talk about that after the show. We got to get that off there. I don't know.
Yeah, you definitely don't want to have all those old things hanging around. But make a list.
Okay.
Make a list of everything that you have on there, who you owe, who you think you don't owe.
Right.
And kind of, I mean, you don't have to do it as a Excel document, but kind of make notes to yourself of this is what needs to be paid. This is who says I owe what. Now let's figure out how much of this stuff I can get off without coming out the pocket first.
So let's say everything on my report, because I've had bad credit for the last 3 years. So everything on my report is 3 years or older. I haven't been able to obtain credit because my shit's been bad. Is it likely that I can get everything off since it's relatively old?
It's likely you can probably get 90% of it off.
Okay.
There may be a few things that won't come off. There may be one or two things that you have to pay. But you can settle on that.
I'm going to look at my credit score now.
Yeah, you can settle on that. You said
you can get it off, 90% of the stuff off. I just need to make sure.
You about to go check dates.
Holy shit, like, yeah, I need to pay you a visit.
Does it matter if it's a creditor that's calling you on the phone, or lawyers are sending you letters, or the government is, you know, you owe money for taxes or something like that?
Those tax liens, they used to be reported, but like I said earlier this year, they changed the law, so they can't be reported, but that doesn't negate the fact that you owe it. So anything tax related, when you file your taxes, they're going to snatch your taxes anyway.
Okay.
So, and then if you don't pay it through paying your taxes and you're working, they're going to attach it to your paycheck. So you're going to pay that some kind of way.
What about tickets? In DC, we got a major ticket problem.
And they'll hit your credit.
And they'll, yes.
Those tickets, you don't have a contract with the collection agency that they send these tickets to.
Okay.
So they shouldn't even be on your credit. So that would be another one that you would dispute, because I don't have a contract with you.
Okay.
DC is funny though. As soon as you pay it, it comes off.
Off your credit?
Yeah, that you'll pay it and it'll come off.
Okay.
But not for everybody, though.
Shit, it did for me.
Yeah, not for everybody.
Because I was riding dirty for a while. But if you ran into bad credit and you want to start to establish credit again, it seems like one of the pitfalls you'll run into is everybody that's offering you credit is going to have the highest APR imaginable. Is there a good place to start?
If it's that bad, it would be, I would say, a secured card or something simple like My Jewelers. My Jewelers is a online jewelry store. You get a $5,000 credit line, and your startup fee is $99.
What does that mean?
Wait, we're trying to help people with their credit.
No, I'm about to shine on them.
Don't, this is information we do not need.
You're paying $99 to actually work on your credit. So if I don't have any good accounts on my credit. Mm-hmm. I don't have the money to put down on a secured card because Capital One wants $500 out of pocket. I don't have that.
But is it Lilway? Are we talking about Lilway? Or like, am I paying $99 until I build a certain amount of money? And
no,
then I get...
you're just paying $99 to activate your account. So you're activating your account. You're getting a $5,000 limit, right? But
I'm going to have new earrings.
No.
Chris going to come in and shine it next week, Jack.
No, but you want to build credit. If you're okay, so let me back up a little bit. Because if you go get this account and everything else is bad, it's not going to help you. So you still need to actually fix some stuff. But I'm saying if you can't pay that secured card or have the money to do extra stuff to build your credit, then this is one of the cheaper ways. Just to take a small jewelry account, you automatically have a $5,000 line. And maybe buy a $130 pair of earrings and pay $10 a month for the next 5 months. That'll help you build your credit.
Or spend $4,989, right? And then pay it off slowly.
No.
Why is that a bad idea?
Because
I've been looking at a chain for a long time. I can't. Listen, this is the
Come
problem.
On, man. You can't
no,
say,
hold on.
You can't say
because I can't get 10... my skin is sensitive, so I got to get 18 carats or above so it don't itch my skin. So it's usually expensive. But now you telling me I could go get me a nice chain, I got $5,000, I'm about to get something fly.
You don't want to do that. You definitely want to get something small. Why? You just want something small. You just want to rebuild your credit. You have to keep that utilization low. That $5,000, you go max it out, you're back in square one. And more than likely, you're not going to pay it back anyway.
Okay.
So, you're going to keep it small.
Okay.
A little chain. Most people have those Pandora bracelets or Alex and Ani and all that other stuff. Get a little trinket for somebody you know, or a gift, or yourself, or a parent, whatever. Something small.
Okay.
And just pay it off. A little $10 a month.
Okay. And at any point, do I close that account or do I?
No, you leave it open. Your goal is to keep it going, just to keep it open to build your credit. You're building credit. So you don't want to keep using it, but you just want to keep it open.
I messed up there. I definitely messed up there. I had a credit card with an insane limit, and I cut it up and closed it out and watched my credit score die.
Why'd you do that? You thought it was the best thing to do?
At the time, I was getting out the military, and I was becoming a contractor. So when you get out in this area, you can triple your pay, which is pretty easy. But I got called back into the military. So I had, you know, this credit card when I had this contractor pay, and then I had to go back into the military and cut my pay in half and a little bit more. So it's kind of like hard carrying all that debt, the car, whatever, whatever. I just ran the problems, cut the card up, close it out.
Well, it makes sense to close out accounts, because then it would show the creditor that you don't have a lot of open accounts. So you have all your money is free. You're not paying anybody.
You lose that history, though. You lose that payment history.
Okay.
I'm shaking my head just hearing it. But I wish I would have never did that.
That's not, it doesn't seem like it's fair, because if I owed someone money and I paid it and then it was closed, it stays on my account. But if I have a zero balance and I close it, you're saying it comes off my account.
It doesn't come off. It just says closed, but your credit score won't move.
Okay. But so does it negatively impact your score, or it just doesn't help it anymore?
It just doesn't help it anymore.
Okay.
And then if you have, so I have this 5-year card that, we're going to say 13 years. I have a 13-year card that I've had that has this insane limit, mm-hmm. as you would say.
Yeah.
Chris's insane limit is 30,000.
No, it's the same when you owe a lot of money. It's not the same when you have a lot of freedom.
Right, and then I just closed the account and didn't do anything with it. Uh-huh. Like, I maxed it out. I don't know if you maxed it out or not, but I maxed it out, and then I closed it. Well, it's going to say closed. So even if you did pay it after you maxed it out, it's not going to reflect that payment history. Because I asked them to close it, or they closed it because it was maxed out for too long.
Okay.
So it doesn't help. It's just, it makes it stagnant. And then I might have a medical collection that came through, a couple of them, because I had to go to the emergency room. And then that just made my score just go down faster.
Okay.
And it just kept going down because that car, I closed it and it's not helping. It's just there.
I feel like medical is killing a lot of people's credit in this country.
Indeed. I see a lot of that.
Yeah, and I don't know if there's a good answer, because, you know, I have a friend, she lost her lung. And
in real life? Or yeah. When she saw her credit report?
No, she lost her lung.
Okay.
I don't think her insurance was good enough at the time, and so she filed for bankruptcy. And I don't know, somewhere along the way, I've heard like 17 cents out of every dollar spent in America is going to healthcare. So,
but sometimes that's not a bad thing, right? Filing for bankruptcy is the best option.
Sometimes it is. It
How do you know when that's the best option?
When you just can't make a way, you've been trying to hold on forever, and you just cannot figure it out.
Okay.
Like I have people that come to me, and I turn them away for bankruptcy because it's not worth it. Mm-hmm. They have $10,000 worth of debt, and they want to file bankruptcy. It doesn't make sense. And you make $40,000. Well, we can figure this out.
How much does it cost to file for bankruptcy?
Typically, for my fees or the actual court itself?
Both. Your fees and then to file with the court.
So for my fees, if you're a single person, I charge $850.
Okay.
But then you have a court fee on top of that for $300.
Okay.
But if you go to an actual law firm, it's about $1,800 to $2,500 that they'll charge you to file for bankruptcy. It depends on who you go to.
And then the court fees?
No, it's all rolled into one. Okay. But you're still paying a lot more.
Right.
But it's a simple process. Usually a bankruptcy from start to finish will take 3 months, but I would assess it for you because I don't want you to go into a bankruptcy that's going to affect you for a while if you don't have to.
So just to piggyback off of my example earlier, I have a repo, I have a judgment, I got collections. Worse than check to check, I'm borrowing, you know, once or twice a month to make it. And maybe my debt isn't that high, but I don't see a path to clearing it up. Is it, and say I want to buy a house in 2 years, would it make sense for me to file for bankruptcy and just eat the debt, and then in a couple of years I have a clean slate and then I can go forward?
It would depend on your financial responsibilities in your household. So do you have kids that you're supporting? Do you only make $30,000 and you have all this debt? You know, do you only make $10 out? You know what I mean? So yeah, it's a number of factors. I wouldn't just say file because I can't pay for stuff.
Right.
Because it wouldn't make sense. So it's a whole system.
Well, how? If I can't pay for it.
If you can't pay for it, then we need to make you a budget.
Oh, okay.
Because you're spending your money's going somewhere.
Right.
It's going somewhere. If you're making it, it's going somewhere.
Right.
So we would literally have to sit down and go step by step through each thing that you're, all your expenditures through the week. Like, to really sit down and talk about it.
Okay.
Like, I don't just say, yeah, okay, come to me for bankruptcy. We have to sit down together and go through it.
Okay.
Like, I ask you detailed things that you'll probably look at me and want to cuss me out because I want to know.
Okay.
And I have to know in order for me to put you on the right track. Right. You can't just give me the bare minimum and expect me to fix it.
All right. Two things. We're coming up on our time for the show, but really quickly, if, say, you're a college student and you're in school and you don't have money, so you forge your father's signature for a loan, right?
With
you haven't established credit quite yet.
Or her ass.
Right? So now, as a father, you can report this, but you're kind of worried that I'm reporting on a family member and this might look bad for him. Or I don't know if you might have worries that the judicial system can get involved, right?
Yeah, because you have to file charges when it comes to something like
that. Yeah, I'm asking for the person who grew up in a household and their parents put them on their credit, or their parents use their credit report, and, you know, vice versa. Is there a good solution for that situation?
It depends on how old it is. Usually, if you're in college, by the time you're in college, that phone bill that they had in your name or that electric bill they had in your name is already in collections and a few years old. So it can typically be disputed and come off when it's things like that. A credit card, more than likely, mom isn't using anymore anyway. She just needed to get through 10 years ago.
Right.
So there will be old things on your credit that need to be addressed, stuff like that can come off, where you don't have to go, you know, push your mom down the flight of stairs or anything like that. I'm just saying.
Don't do that. Never push your mom down a flight of stairs.
I mean, but, you it's know, just to, some people don't look at it like that. Cause, and especially with the younger generation, they want what they want.
That's
and
true.
If you can't, you messed it up for me and I can't get it now and it's your fault.
No, don't put your hands on your mom.
So lastly, for anyone who, like me, didn't necessarily get a credit education in high school, someone young, let's say 15, what would you tell them about starting off on credit on the right foot?
Do's and don'ts.
The do's and don'ts?
Yeah, give us the quick 2-minute financial education as far as credit is concerned.
When you're young, you're always going to want that credit card. You're always going to get those offers as soon as you turn 17 and start getting them in the mail. Mm-hmm. If you get one, do one, just one. And try to keep it low. If it's $300, only spend $50 a month. And just slowly build your credit. If you have that part-time after-school job, just make sure you're paying on that credit card. It'll only take you $10 a month to pay on the $300 card. It's not going to take you that much. But try not to use it. Don't go buy those Jordans. Put it in some people used to keep it. I don't know if they still do this, but some people used to freeze it in the freezer, put in a block of ice so they don't spin their car, stuff like that. Just don't use it. Just try to use it the bare minimum if you have to build that credit, because you will need it when you get out of school, and it takes like 2 seconds to mess it up. So just pay attention. Learn the budget.
I'm laughing because I heard, so stupid I was, how stupid I was. I heard that freeze your credit card thing, and my dumbass put it in a Ziploc bag and just put it in the freezer. So it was just really cold. It didn't freeze. I didn't, just stupid. I'm sorry. And I know Chris said you said we were done, and our time is up. Jack, please forgive me. But Chris mentioned student loans, and I know student loans is a big thing, or you mentioned students. Mm-hmm. And I know student loans is a big thing for people's credit. So is there something quick that you could tell us for a person who has student loans, how they can deal with it, aside from getting it pushed back into all the forbearances and all of those things?
If you don't have it, keep pushing it back. You can push it back until you have it. I mean, if you have it, throw extra money on it. You can keep it in forbearance. Just throw a couple extra dollars on it every month if you have it while you're in forbearance. Because most of the time, they don't have the money. You graduate, you spend all this money, or you spend all this time getting an education, and then my job that I came out to get is like a fraction of what my loans are.
Right.
So it usually doesn't compensate at all. So I understand the struggle with having it. There really is no way to get rid of them, but you definitely don't want them to go into collections. That's going to hold you up forever. Once they go into collections, it's going to be a problem. And now, over the last few years, they put houses. When you buy a house, they put it on, they factor in your student loans now. So you always have to keep them up, pay a little bit extra, try to get them down as much as possible.
So when they're on forbearance, you don't have to pay anything during that
time?
You
don't have to pay anything. But
when you pay it, it takes it down a lot.
It just takes, right.
It goes towards the interest, or no? How does that work?
No, it goes towards the balance.
Okay. But then when they put the interest on top, the balance is lower, so it's cheaper.
Right.
Okay. All right. Thank you so much.
So very
welcome. For sharing your time and your insights, your expertise.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to this program on Full Service Radio, broadcasting and recording from the Line Hotel in Adams Morgan, Washington, D.C. Full Service Radio programming can be accessed live and archived on fullserviceradio.org. Our talk programming is available on most podcast apps like iTunes and Stitcher, and our DJ sets are available on mixcloud.com/fullserviceradio. Full Service Radio features over 30 weekly shows and over 50 local hosts, covering every topic imaginable. If you want to be a guest or get involved, email us at info@fullserviceradio.org. Follow us on Twitter @FullServiceRDO, on Instagram and Facebook @FullServiceRadio. Thanks for listening.